Welcome to Monster Chats, presented by Monster VoIP, where we share the tools, methods, and best practices that business leaders use to build new connections, strengthen relationships, and impact sales and organizations of all shapes and sizes. If you have any questions that come up during today's episode, please text them to 424-378-6966. Please welcome the founder of Monster VoIP, your host, Colin Mitchell.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking with Mila DeChant, who is the founder of Chief of Hearts. We're going to dig in and learn a little bit more about Mila's journey. I've had the pleasure of learning a little bit about it myself, but I'm excited to share with others and learn more. My name is Colin Mitchell. I'm the host of Monster Chats and the founder of Monster VoIP. Mila, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be with you over here today. We had a phenomenal conversation offline a few days ago, so I'm really looking forward to this epic conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you are very passionate and have a cause behind what you're doing, so I'm really excited to share more with others about what you're doing and a little bit more about your journey as well. So let's jump right in. Tell people where you grew up, what you were like as a kid, how, you know, just all of it. Let's just jump right in.
Just jump in like the swimming pool, right? Yeah. So my journey has been a diverse journey. And talking about diversity because it's such a trending topic, right? And my journey is not trending. My journey is reality and a true story. So a little bit about what I do now, and then I'm going to work backwards. Right now, I am the founder and the owner of Chief of Hearts. It's a culture and diversity science company. So the reason behind starting and founding my company was because of a very toxic experience I had during a corporate tenure, right? I was part of a Fortune 500 company, and the first few months was just fantastic. And then I moved to Teams, and that's when I had experienced what hell is. I don't know. I've never been to hell. I don't know what hell is, but I would describe it as hell. And oftentimes, you know, people always say, oh, it's the organization, it's the organization. But to me, it's not the organization. It's the people who make the culture. It's the people who make the organization to be and become. So this toxic experience I had was, or the narratives I heard was, you're not getting enough, you're a foreigner, you can't speak English, even though I'm speaking in English. So apparently it just deciphered to them as gibberish or whatever. And I heard the narratives of you're not getting enough, you know, you're stupid. It was a verbal assault.
What were you thinking? What were you feeling the first time that somebody said that to you?
It came to me as a shock. At the same time, it reminded me of the abusive experience I had encountered when I was a child. I was physically, verbally, and emotionally assaulted by my primary school teacher, where she would say, you're stupid, you're going to grow up to be no one. So that was the immediate emotion I had encountered, because it triggered those trauma. People say that, oh, it's just trauma, get over it. But I'm a true believer of trauma exists in your body. It manifests in your body somehow, and triggers will trigger it. So it really made me feel as though I was rubbish, absolutely rubbish. Because to hear that kind of comment from your manager, it was so discombobulating, because I knew I was doing a fantastic job. I knew I was doing a great job because of the visibility, because of all the feedback I was getting from different teams and different leadership. So this was so discombobulating. And then I saw how she treated me via narratives and behaviors, right? The kind of, narratives I heard was very targeted at my identity markers, as in I'm colored, I'm an immigrant, I've got an accent, you know, I'm not 25, I'm not a millennial, I'm a Zennial. So all these identity markers was used against me. And that was the exact time my dad passed away. And I was given 3 weeks to get over it. 3 days to get over it. And I tried really hard to put away the grievance and then come back to work, because I was the only person who was the breadwinner. And I tried really hard to put, you know, my dad's death on the side and still continue working. And I knew I was doing a good job, but I knew I was not as engaged as I was because of experiencing undergoing grief. So, but at that point in time, that manager used that against me, saying Mila is not in the right mindset. She's distracted. She's not performing well. And she used that against me. She used my vulnerable moment against me. And she hired someone else to replace me without telling me. And she promised me, oh, yes, I'm going to promote you if you do this. You're the best I have, but I need you to do this. So she really exploited me. It's like taking an orange juice and then you squeeze it and you squeeze it even more until you get the last drop of citrus oil. And that's exactly how I felt. And it was just empty promises. And I thought to myself, you know what, I'm not going to fight against this. And she even made my whole team turn against me. So I tried everything. I tried to resolve the conflict by humanizing the conflict. I tried to do everything I could, but it was like an uphill battle. No matter what you do, it's not good enough. So I can't
even imagine being treated like that from your superior. Now, just talk to me a little bit about like what are your options, right? Like just take it and move forward, or report it, or try to resolve it. Like in a huge company like that, being part of a team, like what are your options when you're treated like that?
Right. So a lot of the times, a lot of people think there are many options, but there are multi-layers to what is going on, right? Especially in the workplace. And I researched a lot of these, and that's why I started my science company, because the science behind human behavior, the science behind exclusive diversity, the science behind leadership and how people are treated. So whilst people say, yeah, there are options, and I did reach out to options. I reached out to my manager, because I had two managers. I had to report to two managers. So I went to the manager above her, and the kind of support or lack of support there was, oh, you have to tell me what was going on. So it was, he was dragging the situation more because he didn't want to do that. And later on, I found that he is best friends with her husband. So that's another layer that came into place, because I can understand that he didn't want to rock the boat because he had a friendship. But at the same time, it was his responsibility as a manager to support me and to be my ally. And I knew what was going on. And I didn't even go to HR, because another colleague of mine had experienced the same thing and went to HR, and HR had moved her out of the team. So she lost the opportunity to progress in her career.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my next question, right?
Right.
So my next question was, you know, was this just a couple of bad apples, or was this really, you know, was this happening to other people? What were their experiences? Was there more examples of this, you know, sort of treatment going on throughout the company?
Yes. So especially with this team, right? So it happened to me, another colored person, and two other colored people too. So I left the team to progress into another team at the same company. And it was 10 times worse. 10 times worse, Colin. So I had three direct managers, and it was so polarizing, right? Because there was already a power play within three of them. One wanted another person's job, and then the other person didn't want me to speak with anyone else. So it was just so many moving facets to the organization. And I was brought in to solve the issue. I was brought in to find the gaps and solve the issues that this team was having. So I was told a different story, that all the other teams were not willing to work with my team that I was brought in too. So of course I love working backwards. So I interviewed everyone. I interviewed cross-functional teams. That's data, right? And you analyze the climate of the business. And I found a lot of gaps, and And I wrote like a few 3 to 6 pages on what was going on, and that was quickly dismissed by my manager. And I was told, you're not supposed to reach out to anyone, you're not supposed to speak with anyone. Every email that you send up needs to be vetted by this. So they quickly knew that I was not going to be a yes woman for them. And as I spoke with other people, I would get reprimanded for, I didn't give you permission to speak with anyone. Or if I did something, they would attack me as, I didn't let you, this is not why I hired you. I was like, this is not why you hired me, to solve problems. And because the problems also showed their incompetence, and it was not my mission to show their incompetence, but my mission was to solve the issues, because it was not only impacting one person, but it was impacting multiple people who were in the team. And they started changing my job description, changing my, you know, a task and everything. Again, I heard the narrative of, you're a foreigner, you can't speak English, no one understands you, you're not capable of presenting. They created smear campaigns to defame my character. And other team leadership were like, oh no, Mila's doing a great job. And they, because their validation, that other team's leadership validation would prove that I am capable of my job. So what they did was kept on creating this environment, asked me to do project A, stop project A, go to project D, stop that, go to project B, stop that, go back to project A, stop that, gave me various directions or would not give me information to move forward with projects. And then they put me on a PIP and wrote me up for not doing a good job. So, and then they reduced my title from a global program manager to being a data entry level person. So I knew what was going on because I found that behavior with the previous team too. But since it was so excruciatingly painful, I had experienced depression, I had anxiety, I actually contemplated suicide in 2018 because I believed all the lies which was taught to me. And something, I call it magical, something magical happened. As I was about to jump, I heard a voice, and I don't know where this voice came from, but it made me rethink my currency. It made me rethink my confidence again. And something absolutely changed. During that point of time, as I heard the voice, new team members came in. They became my sponsors saying, hey, we see what's going on. You need to fight back, but this is how you'll fight back. And excuse me, they partnered up with me on a lot of projects. They made sure that I launched all the projects that I was doing that was removed from me without no good reason. I launched multiple global projects and programs, ensuring that the team moved forward. And it was so validating. I felt so validated when I finally had success partners. And because of that experience, it was just not isolated, right? Even though people tell me, oh, Joss, it's not a very unique story. But I'm not sharing my story to be unique. I'm sharing my story to let other people know that there's still hope. And when I started seeing, when I started telling my story, when I started creating programs and advocating for other people who don't have voices or who don't have those kind of success partners like what I did, when I started sharing and creating programs, a lot of other people started coming up to me and said, and shared that, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for speaking up. Thank you so much for advocating for us. And that felt so good, right? Mm. Because felt so good, not from an ego perspective, felt so good because I felt as though I was liberating someone else. That someone else was a colored person. That someone else was an immigrant. That someone else was someone who could speak English, but a different dialect of English, but was, you know, barked at as saying, oh, you can't speak properly. So from a very oppressive state of situational leadership, right? Or dominant leadership. So I felt so empowered to create those kind of programs and advocacy. So that is what pushed me to start my company, very focused on culture and diversity science, helping organizations, hey, that's the science behind it, because people need psychological safety in order to perform really well, for you to retain people, right? You can't say, oh, I'm diverse, I'm really diverse, and hire X, Y, Z people in your organization and absolutely forget about that. But I've always been passionate about this, but that experience really pushed me, was the catalyst to really push me. And my background in being in different parts of the world, different parts of cities, countries, my background in engineering, in education, higher education, my entrepreneurship, right? It's like, I started like 15 years ago, I started doing cross-cultural and multicultural communication work. 15 years ago, it was not known as diversity. 15 years ago, it was known as cross-cultural and multicultural.
So can we go back for a second? So, I mean, the level of abuse, you said almost, you know, I mean, pushed you to suicidal thoughts. So how did you come out of the other end of that?
Yeah, so I took time. I took time to heal. You know, when you undergo something as traumatic as that, right, when not one person, but a few people who, all these four people who abused me verbally and emotionally looked alike, sounded alike, had the same mindset, they were not open to collaboration. They were not open to diversity. And I had to reflect that the problem wasn't with me as what was told to me, right? If the problem was with me, I had to reflect, why was I celebrated or accepted or invited into other leadership teams to have discussions? Why was I told that I'm doing a fantastic job? Why was I invited to collaborate with people? So it took me some time to heal, to really realize my worth as well. Because it's so easy to lose your worth when all you hear, not for one day, but 2.5 years, all you hear is that you're not good enough. And it's not once a day. It's every single day via text, via emails.
How did you even have the courage to get up, get dressed, and show up for your job every day?
I did not, but I kept on thinking about my mom. My mom is paralyzed, so I support her in some way financially. Say, I always thought about my mom, and I always thought about what my dad would tell me, you know, what my parents would tell me. They would always tell me not to give up, not to give in to people. Especially my dad would always tell me, like, just because you're female does not mean that you can't do all the work that a man is doing. You can do anything and everything anyone is doing. So I always had that reminder at the back of my head. And when, especially my dad passed away, it took a toll on me. But reminding myself as to who matters the most in my immediate circle, who matters the most, what kind of impact am I going to leave even when these people are not around or are still around, right? The constant reminder of what is my purpose? Why am I born? When I kept on asking that question to myself, it allowed me to heal. It allowed me to step up. And that's why I didn't start my company like immediately. I started my podcast. And then because I wanted to give resolutions through my podcast. And then from podcasting, I started researching. And then from researching is when I started like saying, okay, I need to build this company app. So it took a lot of time to heal. Through healing, I found solutions. Through solutions, I found different methods and connections. So, yeah, those were all like processes that I had gone through.
Wow. Okay. So now your mission is to educate companies more about diversity and the science behind it.
Right. So my whole mission, I call it my mission, is to eliminate poverty of the minds and hearts to enable acceptance, inclusion, belonging, and diversity. Because I feel that we have diversity all wrong. We talk about belonging, we talk about inclusion without even realizing how one wants to be accepted. How do we build a space of acceptance without even wanting to realize that anyone who shows up in your organization, we need to look at them from an extended lens, right? And also, how are they surviving? Do they have a sustainable life? Like, we need to start thinking about, if we displace them, if we do not accept them the way that they want to be accepted based on their skills, their strengths, the way that they learn, the way that they progress, they can never belong. They can never belong.
So how do you get down to the brass tacks of how each individual is so unique and has different meaning behind mm-hmm. what that means to them? And in a large company, how do you mm-hmm. accommodate that?
Yeah, so it's not an overnight effort. So one of the things that I do with organizations is build success partnerships. So success partnerships can be 6 months to 1 year. And I often advocate for 1 year, because change can't happen 3 months. And you only start seeing, not even results, you only start seeing unraveling certain facets within 6 months. Mm-hmm. You implement something, and then within 6 months you see one sort of change, because change is not something that, you know, oh, I'm changing my clothes today. No, change with humans, change with behavior takes time. It's like dieting, right? You can diet and exercise, and it takes, what, 8 weeks, even for yourself to notice that your bum is getting smaller. So that's exactly how I approach. And I always go back to working backwards. Working backwards as in from listening to your people. I don't call them employees, I call them people. Mm. Listening to your people, speaking with them, having focus groups, you know, like listening, what's going on? How are you being treated? And then from there, working backwards as to what kind of solutions do they want? And then working backwards again, what kind of solutions do they want? And do they have the kind of solutions they in the organization? So I always work backwards, and then I present this. And I don't attack from a point of, okay, these are the solutions. I always attack from a point of resolutions. I approach it from a lens of how do we, like conflict, right? When you're fighting, it's just not, okay, compromise, end of story. I don't look at it from a compromise way, because compromise is one day someone will win, the other day someone will lose. No, this is equity. So I always approach it from, how do we resolve a problem? The problem is a conflict. Conflict with whom? With people. People, what is it conflicting them with? Is it the heart? It's often the heart. Because when you come to work and when someone excludes you, you feel as though you're not valuable. If so, you come to work and then you're in a meeting and the manager goes around the room, acknowledges everyone except you, that makes you feel isolated. So I always work from backwards and identify those things and build success partnerships. And during the success partnerships, I identify how can we work each issue, right? How can we break down each issue? How can we dismantle it and build solutions from an agile perspective? I say agile because if something is not working, we need to reconsider it again. We need to pivot again. Just like I always go back to using this example of diet and exercise. You know, if you're eating chicken every day, even though if it's steamed chicken, whatever chicken, and you're not losing weight, you need to pivot. You need to rethink, okay, chicken is not working for me. I'm going to switch to salmon. So that's exactly how I see agile working backwards in an agile method. So that's the process that I do with organizations. How can we repivot? How can we build for equity? And I work in a very decentralized method, not top down, but bottom up. Mm. Every analysis, every decision-making process, I always ensure that organizations have their team members present, always include them in decision making, because it's not only going to impact the company as a whole, right? Like with your financial or anything of that sort, but it's going to impact their people as in people who have been oppressed or people who are the oppressors. So we need to look as to these are the conversations that we're having with you. These are the decisions that we're making.
How, I have a question. So how often, and you brought up a good point, is, you know, it affects, you know, the people, the oppressors as well, right? So how often do these individuals not even realize how they're affecting others?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So I will answer. So from what I have seen, people are really good at putting on a facade, right? So the oppressors, normally, they know that they're oppressing someone else. So immediately they will go on a defense saying, oh, I didn't know. So they will take on this persona like a kindergarten teacher with a very soft-spoken voice and treating the oppressed as though they're five-year-old. So they'll take on that persona. So that will immediately let me know that they know, but they're acting. But I will not call them out on that. So that's a different approach that I have to take, because that's a conflict within a conflict itself.
Right.
So most of the time, about 80% of the time, people take on that persona. And then 20% of the time, people are really genuine, saying, I didn't know about that. Because when someone is really genuine, they have their voice, they will acknowledge that it's being uncomfortable for them. And those are the kind of like dichotomy that I see in behavior as well in oppressors. So that's a really tricky situation, not tricky, but needs to be handled very gently and yet firmly.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it has a lot to do with tone and body language and really reading beyond, in between the lines of what people are saying.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I always encourage organizations to rethink people managers or people sponsors. Because when you have managers who oversee team members, they need to be people sponsors. You need to rethink, are they really suitable to work with other team members? If they don't have those skills, right, that soft skills, which are not soft, those are hard skills, right? Those soft skills to interact with another human being, to really understand them, to find their strengths as opposed to always picking on their weaknesses. That's why I always encourage and challenge organizations to rethink the whole narrative of managers versus people sponsors. Are you hiring someone who is making $1 million and promoting them to be a manager? Or are we truly needing to rethink that whole landscape? Because not necessarily someone who brings in $1 million can work with people, can support people and drive them. Most of the time you see people who don't have that skill become managers, retention rate drops tremendously. So I always challenge companies to rethink that structure.
Okay. All right. Well, before I let you go, thank you so much for sharing your story. I mean, it's tremendous that what you went through and you kept showing up, and now you're, you know, trying to give back, share your story, help others with this issue. But before I let you go, I know you have a book that you're working on. So tell people a little bit about the book, and then people can find out, connect with you online and find out more about your company.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to release this book. I'm still working on it. It's called Isolated Diversity. It's very focused on diversity, not being an isolated team that does not belong in the basement or in a deserted island. It's actually an integrated effort in your whole organization, and diversity is your culture. And culture is not about ping pong tables or beer pong tables and whatnot. So I talk a lot about, you know, how do you progress colored women in the workplace? I talk a lot about pay equity and how pay equity is directly related with your diversity efforts. And I release small snippets every week by giving DEI tips. And those teams are in my book. So you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. And yeah, look out for the book. It's coming out in December.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mila. Really appreciate it. Welcome to the Monster Chats community. If you're listening to the podcast, please subscribe, share with your friends. We're listening for your feedback. The show is all about you.
Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Monster Chats, presented by Monster VoIP. where we share the tools, methods, and best practices that business leaders use to build new connections, strengthen relationships, and impact sales in organizations of all shapes and sizes. If you have any questions from today's show and want to reach us directly, please text your question to 424-378-6966.